Well, Gallatin Valley and online listeners, this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM Radio 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana, and I greet you warmly on this high summer day. Very warmly looking at the forecast. It seems that the West enjoyed a span of lower than seasonal temperature days. And before they ended, Ken Lane put together this freshest episode of Desert Oracle Radio. This one, released July 6th, 2026, he calls Haunted Houses and Monsoon Rains.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, our favorite time of day when desert summer comes a-calling. Although there's no real sense in complaining about it, it's the desert southwest in summertime. What else were you expecting? And in truth, which we are somewhat dedicated to on this program, though not to the point of stomping all the fun out of anything worthwhile, it hasn't been all that hot out. Not yet. Not yet this year. Temperatures have been below average, or right about what you'd expect in much of the arid West. As weather is always changing, sometimes the scorcher visits the Mojave, and sometimes it visits New York City. And when it visits New York City, well, they say you can't even turn on the air conditioner, because they don't have any electricity to spare from the Taylor Swift wedding at the indoor sports arena. They're starting to treat New Yorkers like Europeans. No AC in the summertime. Our greatest climate control device of the Mojave, the swamp cooler, doesn't work too well on the East Coast. You need a very dry climate for the evaporative cooler to work. Water is nice and all, but water everywhere means very high humidity, plus billions of disease-ridden mosquitoes, and ticks, too. I see ticks maybe 3 or 4 times a year in the Mojave after that 1 week when it rains. The deer lose a few of their ticks coming down the mountains, and a few of those ticks get on a random weed stalk and wait for a coyote or a bobcat or my old dog to walk by. But if you have a short-haired dog, it's fairly easy to find a tick, which immediately crawls under the only shelter it can find on a short-haired dog, right under the collar. Anyway, good for Taylor Swift, finally finding a husband after all these years of making songs about trying to find a husband. Now what's she gonna write about? And good for her new husband, too. Good old Kelsey Grammer. They're going to name the first baby George Washington Jr. in honor of the night he was conceived at Madison Square Garden. No wonder cameras weren't allowed. Now, I'm no billionaire pop singer, but if I was getting married, I'd want to have the wedding maybe outside in May, when the weather's nice. Outside the old church house under the willow tree, in the fresh air, instead of under the train station in Midtown Manhattan. Probably the filthiest place on earth. A place of pestilence and wretched urban July. Maybe she's gonna get a reservation in May. Everybody wants to get married in May, and being a billionaire isn't what it used to be. But I've got some good news for those of you hoping for some of nature's air conditioning in the desert, the Sonoran and the Great Basin deserts in particular. Although the eastern Mojave will also be affected. Monsoon season is on the way. And the weather prediction markets say it's going to be a real wet monsoon time. And the monsoon action is going to rise up pretty far north, reaching well into the Great Basin from the Eastern Sierra, clear out to Elko and to Salt Lake City, and even Cheyenne. Those wildfires in Arizona and Utah will hopefully get a good soaking, although monsoon thunderstorms bring lightning strikes too. But there's a lot of that moisture that will be sucked up from the Sea of Cortez and point south. And there is nothing better than a heavy monsoon drenching after a spell of hot, dry summer in the desert. Especially after this coming week, when temperatures will be rising across the southwest. We've had it pretty easy so far, but as the summer heat dome breaks up over the northeast U.S., we're getting a high-pressure system over the mountain and desert southwest. Our own heat dome that will especially aggravate the smoky conditions because there will be little air movement and low humidity. Monsoon rains start by mid-July, Zeus willing.
Desert Oracle Radio.
I like summer all right, it's fine. I like the 4th of July parties and the pretty fireworks, the rodeo up in Bishop, and the Independence Day parade and Flagstaff. But sometimes I even do some river running. When people are kind enough to invite me and I can get the time off, get out of the radio studio and away from the mailbox full of bills. But truth be told, there's nothing I like better than the fall, which, with the passing of summer solstice, is now officially on the way. With every passing day of the summer, scorcher or not, we are on the march towards autumn. Towards cooler days and longer nights, the time of graveyards and ghost stories. It's always time for ghost stories. But just wait for nighttime, maybe on that little river beach of pebbles and sand and driftwood. Where you've camped for the night, on your river run, campfire crackling close to the water, safe as milk. The canyon walls fading up into the black sky above, only the stars to show where rock ends and sky begins. When every rustle in the cottonwoods behind you might just be something you don't want to meet tonight or any night. We don't have to wait for October, is what I mean. Tonight's just right for a ghost story you maybe haven't heard before. Although it's an old one. An oldie but a moldy, as the DJs used to say. There was a certain writer. One of those Stoic types who was working on his great book. He hoped it would be great, at least. But he was pretty well known and had a little money and some time off for his purpose. So he spent some time investigating this town where he would spend the season writing his masterwork. And a big old house caught his eye. You know the type. It was spacious, somewhat isolated at the edge of the neighborhood, with a big garden and lots of mature trees. The whole thing walled for privacy. The mansion was obviously vacant, the yard a bit overgrown. And then he saw the for rent sign. The price was right there, and it was a bargain. See, he wanted peace and quiet, not designer drapes and a monthly bill to match. So he took down the information, and then he inquired around the neighborhood. What was the story with this vacant house? What the writer learned was this. In the dead of the night, a noise like the clashing of iron was frequently heard. And if you listened with attention, it sounded like the rattling of chains. At first, from a distance, but then approaching nearer by degrees. And then a phantom appeared, in the form of an old man, extremely meager and squalid, with a long gray beard and bristling hair. And he was rattling the shackles on his wrist and ankles. What about the prior residents? Had they experienced this horror? Yes. The miserable inhabitants passed away many sleepless nights under the most dismal terrors imaginable. And for the last tenants, the final tenants, this nocturnal torture proved too much. That family was no longer around. Those people had been, in fact, scared to death. And ever since, the big house had been left deserted, being judged by all to be absolutely uninhabitable. The place was now entirely abandoned to the ghost. But in hopes that some tenant might be found who was ignorant of this great calamity, a sign was put up, giving notice that the miserable mansion was available for either lease or sale. This author was not prone to hysteria and was, in fact, known for being a penny pincher, a real cheapskate. So he went back to town and he contacted the real estate agency. The extraordinary cheapness of the lease had raised both his suspicion and his interest in the property. Instead of being discouraged by the neighbors' tales of previous occupants being literally scared to death, he was in fact more strongly inclined to rent the place. And in short, he actually did so. The mystery had intrigued him nearly as much as the inexpensive rent. He asked that his bed be prepared in the front of the house by the large study where he arranged his writing table. And as night fell upon the creaking old mansion, he concentrated his mind upon the task at hand, which was writing his book. And by lamplight, he did just that. The first part of the night passed with the expected silence, but as the hour grew late and he scribbled away at his work, the unmistakable sound of clanking iron chains could be heard from the shadows. he neither lifted up his eyes nor laid down his pen, but closed his ears by concentrating his attention. The noise increased and advanced nearer, till it seemed at the door of the study. And at last, right there in the chamber. He looked around and saw the apparition exactly as it had been described. The ragged ghost stood before him, beckoning with a finger. The writer, incredibly, raised a finger to the ghost, making a clear signal that the apparition should wait a little. And then he returned to his writing. At this, the phantom raised its chains over the author's head, rattling them much louder now, and gaining the stubborn writer's attention again, beckoned as before. With that, the unflappable author picked up his lamp and followed the ghost, who slowly stalked along, encumbered by its heavy chains. Out into the courtyard they went, this specter and the man. And with that, the ghost faded into the darkness outside. It was gone, chains and all. The night was, once again, utterly silent. Standing in the very place where the apparition had vanished, the writer grabbed a handful of leaves off the tree closest to him and marked the spot so it would be clear by morning's light. With that, he retired to bed and slept without disturbance. The next day, he went to the police. He told them he'd taken up residence in the notorious haunted house and advised them to dig up that very spot he'd marked in the garden. And there, with the writer watching, they made a gruesome discovery, finding a shallow grave with bones and strings of white hair commingled and intertwined with chains and shackles. For the body had moldered away by long lying in the ground, leaving the skeleton bare of flesh and corroded by the iron fetters. The bones were collected and then buried at the public expense with proper religious ceremony and full honors. Afterwards, the house was haunted no more. The wretched soul had been released from its long torment. The haunted house was in Athens. Athens, Greece, not Georgia. And the author at the story's center was Athenodorus Kananitis. Athenodorus, or Athenodorus, depending on how you like to pronounce it, was a Stoic philosopher held in high enough regard that he had been personal tutor to Octavian, Caesar Augustus. Octavian, it is said, was directly rebuked by his teacher, who instructed the Caesar to control his anger and recite the alphabet until his emotions cooled. Good advice to this day. Athenodorus was from a town called Canaena, or Canaana, which was right outside Tarsus, the ancient city famed as the meeting place of Antony and Cleopatra, and also the birthplace of St. Paul, Paul of Tarsus. Athenodorus had been director of the great library there, one of the greatest of the ancient world, with more than 200,000 books. And while his own works did not survive the 2,019 years since he died, at the age of 81, he is well remembered in surviving texts by his close friend Strabo, and in letters by Pliny the Younger, who told this ghost story, the oldest known haunted house story, and the defining standard of the genre. Where did he tell it? In a collection of horror tales he sent by letter to Sura, and found today in Pliny the Younger's Book 7, Letter Number 27, from the Loeb edition of 1915. About a half dozen of his works are remembered by title, and the one that intrigues me most was titled Perambulations. Or, as Henry David Thoreau titled his own collection on this same topic, so essential to philosophers then and now, On Walking. Have you had your walk today? Sometimes we get worried when the dog hasn't had a walk, and we forget that we also haven't had a walk. Anyway, don't think that such ghost tales are limited to the past. That such ghostly encounters are confined to the times before our lives and culture were so terribly disconnected and disenchanted from the nature and fable of the pre-modern age. I've got another ghost story to tell you. And this one is from this past weekend. It just happened. It seems that Bill Schultz, a television personality who was on Twitter, was staying in an old house in Gettysburg, a home away from home, as he put it. And it's right there on the historic, blood-soaked battlefield of the Civil War. This was his brief report that I saw on Saturday. I am on the porch of my 18 and 34 era Gettysburg home away from home at 3:30 a.m. in the middle of the battlefield. And I just heard horses go by. Yeah, no horses here. Later that day, Schultz wandered amongst the many war memorials outside his old house and posted this.
I know what I heard, and it was weird. It was a lot of horses outside of my 1834 place in Gettysburg, and there were no horses. And there were no men, but I've been trying throughout this battlefield to find something else, and I haven't.
He sounds spooked. He ought to have a drink or something. That's Bill Schultz on Twitter, X. You can see it yourself. And because the phantom remnants of great battles is one of my specialties, I replied to him. I said, this is something people have reported from the plain of Troy in Waterloo to all the famed and bloody Civil War battlefields. People of a sensitive and poetic disposition are most likely to hear the horses and see the phantom hosts. You should get this book from the Gettysburg Museum, which is right by you there. Civil War Ghost Trails, Stories from America's Most Haunted Battlefields by Mark Nesbitt. And Bill Schultz did not reply, did not even like my post. Well, to hell with him. May he be trampled by ghostly horses. Maybe he already was. Which would be appropriate, as William Dawes Schultz says he's a direct descendant of the William Dawes who took part in Paul Revere's midnight ride on April 18, 1775. It was Dawes who rode out of Boston just before the British sealed off the town. His job was to warn John Hancock and Samuel Adams that they were now in danger of being captured by the Redcoats, the lobster packs. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from KCDZ 107.7 FM in the high desert, Friday nights at 10 p.m. Thanks to our patrons, the too few, who support this radio show and podcast at DesertOracle.com and Patreon.com/Desert Oracle. You'll get another long live episode of Campfire Stories coming up shortly, along with a complete and commercial-free archive of every Desert Oracle radio show and live special going back to the beginning. 9 years of DOR. Hundreds of hours of fine radio written and produced for you, the Desert Seeker. Whether you're in Death Valley by campfire light or New Jersey during a power outage. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for our soundscapes tonight. A quick reminder that August 14 and 15 at Pappy and Harriet's in the Desert Willow Ranch across the way in Pioneer Town. Desert Oracle will be at the Spacecraft Festival with all kinds of electronic artists, including Tangerine Dream and Steve Roach, and an outdoor screening of Welcome Space Brothers. Go online to Spacecraft Joshua Tree. 1- and 2-day tickets on sale now. August in Pioneer Town. I'm gonna leave my winter coat at home, I think. Hope you had a good Independence Day weekend if you're in the USA. And a happy official summertime to you all. Thanks for listening. And good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at KGVM.org. I was recently exploring an area of Montana I'd like to return to one day. It's the American Prairie Reserve, and trust me, it will take 3, maybe 4 visits for me to feel like I covered it all. Well, my initial time there was a couple days and nights of camping at the Antelope Creek Campground. It's high prairie, and the trails there wander through a busy prairie dog town, as well as a pothole pond where cinnamon teal and shoveler ducks floated on the waters with their mates and ducklings. Those waters and the air above were busy with the insects of summer, as you can imagine. Here are a couple readings about some insects you might see there or at the Inderlund Wetlands in Bozeman. From Kathy Katz's book, Nature, A Day at a Time, for July 12th, she writes, "Male dragonflies are highly territorial, defending their area by attacking intruding dragonflies in mid-air clashes. The loser usually drowns after an aerial blast. Their short life as adults, lasting only a few weeks, is occupied with defending territory, finding partners, and ultimately mating and laying eggs. With so much to accomplish in so short a time, the intensity increases, as does the competition. By necessity, females are much choosier than males about selecting mates. A female's investment in time and energy is much greater than his, and males can impregnate more females in a shorter time and are available for sex throughout their lifetime, while the female is dedicated to one clutch of eggs. Competition for sex is often seen with thousands of dragonflies paired in loops near waterways during the hottest weeks of summer." And then she closes with this quote, "Entomologists fall into two categories, those who find insects endlessly fascinating and those who would get rid of them. Those who would get rid of insects are afflicted with an impulse to drop bricks on beetles and all other small crawly things. They may eventually wind up working for chemical companies, devising more sophisticated techniques of annihilation." And that came from Roger Torrey Peterson in A Field Guide to Insects, America North of Mexico, by Donald J. Borer and Richard E. White. And then for July 13th, she writes, "Whirligigs, or gyrinus, float quietly on ponds and lakes until disturbed, and then they whirl around erratically with the wild and crazy chaos of hundreds of bumper cars out of control. The group frenzy startles predators, or at least confuses them enough to buy the whirligigs some time. How do these tiny whirling maniacs avoid colliding with each other? Special antennae divided so that one part rests on the water and distinguishes its own ripples from its neighbors, enabling them to dodge the reflected ripples. They also have two sets of eyes, allowing them to see under and out of water. Not much bigger than a ladybug, each tiny whirligig would be an easy meal for larger animals, but as a colony, the whirligigs together become a formidable defense system." And she closes with a quote, "You started with a chaotic, irregular cloud of gas and dust tumbling and contracting in the interstellar night. You ended with an elegant, jewel-like solar system, brightly illuminated, the individual planets neatly spaced out one from another, everything running like clockwork. The planets are nicely separated, you realize, because those that aren't are gone." And that came from Carl Sagan and Anne Druyan in Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors. You know, summer, with its very long days, it's a nice time to ponder big questions. Taking time to watch the sun rise or set, or seeing the vastness of the night sky, can lay the ground for a deeper understanding of so many things. And we have many gifted people in our community that are willing to share their unique insights and gifts with others. I met one recently that you might want to know about. I am here with a very interesting person that I met recently, and I'm going to have her introduce herself.
Hi, my name is Courtney Todd, and I live here in Gallatin County. Been here most of my life, actually, since my early teenage years. Recently went into a spiritual awakening, and I'm trying to navigate that, learning so much about spirit communication. I'm an Akashic Records practitioner, as well as a Reiki master and medium.
Thank you. And Courtney, I think you have a business in town. That's where I met you. Could you talk about that a little bit?
I do. I'm the owner of The Divine Connection. So through my business, I do, again, Reiki healing, Akashic Records readings, psychic work, and spiritual guidance.
Nice. Can you talk about where that is for people that aren't familiar with it?
My location is at 313 West Minden Hall. Mm-hmm. I do also work through Wild Wisdom Collective, downtown Bozeman.
Mm-hmm. So you told us you're an energy healer and Akashic Records practitioner. Mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners what those practices mean?
Oh, absolutely. So the Akashic Records are basically it's a spiritual place, an energetic data place that holds the energy blueprint of everything that's ever occurred in the universe. So it's a non-physical library created of energy that contains the complete history of every soul and future possibilities. And then Reiki healing is a Japanese energy technique where the practitioner channels universal energy or chi, life force, into your body. So the goal of that is to clear energetic blockages, reduce stress, and promote your body's natural healing abilities.
We'd like to hear about how you came to these practices. For example, when in your life did you begin to know that you could do these things? And was there any formal training as well?
Oh, absolutely. It was actually kind of a rude awakening from the universe, I'd like to say. I did not understand spiritual awakening whenever it started happening with me. I had came into my awakening really about 5 years ago that I really understood it started taking off and increased extremely quickly after that. I had started a meditation practice, and when I'd close my eyes, I would just start seeing images, almost like a pictograph. It was very unusual. And then I started feeling the energetic vibration in my body change as I was vibrating higher and higher, connecting to other realms, other beings. And I really did not understand what was happening. It was kind of frightening at that time. You know, I was like, am I going crazy? Because I was also hearing voices. And then I learned very quickly about clairs, clairaudience, clairsentience, clairvoyance, so clear seeing, clear healing or hearing, clear knowing, clear tasting, clear smelling. There are lots of ways that we receive information. And I really just had to take a step back, learn, and try to find people that could help me to understand what was happening. You know, I tuned into my intuition rather quickly, and I would find a phone number. I found a psychic in Billings and just cold called her. I need help. What is wrong with me? And I knew that I needed to speak with her. She assisted me in understanding that I was going through an awakening and that the process would continue. I would continue to elevate. And you know, my life was going to go through some very large changes, which they did, abruptly. You kind of clear out the garbage. You start seeing the difference in between your highest self and ego. And that was huge for me. It really brought in an understanding of even the people in my life and who I wanted to be around and why I wanted to be around them. And, you know, as that process continued, my psychic abilities grew very quickly as well. Now I recognize that they were always there. I just didn't understand that was what was happening. I didn't know how to listen to my intuition. And a spiritual awakening will teach you that real fast.
Oh, wow. Wow, it sounds like quite a growth experience.
It was.
And why might someone request your services?
You know, most people request different treatments, different services, for overall clarity, healing, and then insight on their own spiritual journey. So, for instance, whenever I access the Akashic Records of another human, I do have to have permission. They don't just want to give me free for all of all the knowledge in the universe. I can't imagine why. But okay, I'll take it. So I go into that session, you know, asking the person that I'm doing the reading for to be a little bit prepared on what they're wanting to pull out, why, and what it means for them. So whenever I access, the clarity can come through, not quite as obstructed as if someone comes in and has no idea what they want to know. Then we sort of have to figure out what they're needing at that time, which can take a lot more time and be very confusing. This universe is complicated. And our soul's journeys, it's also very complicated. You know, a lot of people are wanting to know what their soul purpose is and why they incarnated at this time. And, you know, if they have a relationship with someone, a best friend or spouse, were there previous incarnations? Are there any soul contracts? Is there anything that I need to know about this relationship that can assist it to grow? You know, some people want to know about trauma. Where did this trauma come from? Or a phobia? You know, is this something from past life or is this something from earlier in this life? Can you please provide clarity on that? And normally there is a great deal of clarity. For instance, myself, I had children very young. I was 19 years old when I was pregnant with my oldest daughter. And what a blessing she is. She's amazing. But I really branched out away from my family during that time. My family is very Western medicine. You go to the hospital and you have an epidural, and that is how you bring a baby into this world. And that's all I ever knew. And oddly enough, I chose to have a midwife. I found out that that was legal. That was quite funny for my family. They didn't understand that it was actually legal to do. But I had made that choice. And it was so strong in me. No one understood why I wanted home birth and why I wouldn't just go to the hospital and, you know, have all the epidural and all the things done that is so traditional in this country, which is wonderful. It's fun. There's not a bad way to bring a baby into this world. But for me, it was so deep that I couldn't explain why I couldn't be in the hospital. And whenever I first had access to my own Akashic Records, one of the things that brought a lot of clarity was the understanding and me seeing into my own past lives that I had been a midwife and a healer over and over and over again for centuries. So then I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. Why I couldn't follow the path of everyone else. I didn't feel connected to it.
What are questions that people often ask about a session that our listeners might like to know?
You know, a lot of times in energy healing specifically, people are curious as to what it's going to do. What do you mean you help to clear blockages? What is that? And I always go to the seven chakras. So we have seven chakras within our body. The root, sacral, solar plexus, heart, throat, third eye, and crown chakra. And all of those really work towards a very different goal. So for instance, our root chakra, which is located right at the base of our spine, it represents foundation, our survival, and grounding. And basically our safety. So if that chakra is imbalanced, a lot of times people will find a lot of fear coming up, or financial insecurity, an overall feeling of not being grounded into the earth. When you get that chakra specifically into alignment, into a working and clear energy, all of those things seem to balance. And again, every chakra has a different meaning and, you know, controls a different part of our world.
Now, if somebody comes to you, how is an Akashic record reading going to be different from an energy healing session?
Mm-hmm. So an Akashic record reading, I am actually entering the quantum field energetically. So my vibration will shift to an extremely high vibration. It's amazing. But through that vibration, I'm able to work with guides, guardians, angels, and I connect with them clairvoyantly, for the most part, and psychically. And as we're going through asking questions, looking for clarity on the life specifics of the client or person that I'm working with, they will send me information. I call it a download of what I'm needing to help them to understand. So it's kind of like being a very long-distance translator, if you will. Universal translator.
So that's the Akashic record reading experience. And then if someone comes to you for an energy healing session, what is that like?
So an energy healing session, you will lay down on a massage table. And as you're laying on the massage table, I will start channeling energy. It comes through my crown and comes out of the palms of my hands and actually the soles of my feet as well, which is really helpful to keep me grounded. And through light touch across the body or even hovering over a couple inches, the energy will go into the body to help move those blockages and help clear anything stagnant that the body is physically holding on to.
Is this something that's painful or scary for the recipient?
No, not at all. For someone who hasn't experienced energy movement within the body, they can be a little shocked at what they're experiencing because it's new, something that, you know, they haven't felt before. But most people really feel a sense of calm. A lot of people feel like they're floating. Seeing colors is common. Feeling cold or warm flushes through the body as the energy releases is very common. And most people come out of a session almost like whenever you've had a really amazing massage. It's almost a euphoric feeling of just happiness and calm and peace. Very amazing stress reliever.
Would you like to talk about your mediumship?
Yes. Mediumship. Oh, it's fun. Learning spirit communication in that modality has truly been a blessing. I never dreamed in a million years I would be doing this work. It was very shocking to me because I was like, wait, me? Are you sure you've got the right human? Like, I don't do this stuff. What do you mean I'm supposed to communicate with spirit? And as time went on, I was able to learn. One, there is a learning curve. It did not come with the best instructions. but I do what is called evidential mediumship. So with a client, I will connect with spirit. And because I don't know the person that I'm working with, I don't know their specific life, and I don't know the life that the spirit had. And I definitely don't know the life that they had together. You know, I have typically 2 minutes of introduction, and then I'm working on connecting with spirit. And when I start to pull that information, they will show me very specific things within that life. So an example will be, I connected with a spirit at one point in time that was showing me airplanes. And, you know, I was like, okay, this person was on a lot of airplanes. I understood that. And then they were showing me a drum. And I was like, well, I see a drum, but I'm not entirely sure what this drum means. Is this a mechanical drum or is this a musical drum? And so I'm trying to ask spirit for clarity on that. Can you please help me to understand what this drum is? And they'll show me music. And I'm like, okay. So this spirit, this soul was highly involved in music. And I can feel their personality come in. They were extremely stern. They were extremely to the point, and they wanted everything done in order. Their career was very important, and from the planes, I do know that they wanted or needed to travel a lot. And then my client will come in, and I'll ask, you know, does this resonate with you? Do you know what spirit I'm connecting with? And, you know, a client will be like, oh my goodness, that's my uncle. Yes, he flew all over and was the drummer in a band, you know, in the 60s. And that was exactly how he was. He was very curt and to the point. And I'm like, okay, wonderful. We know who we're connecting to. We can identify spirit and who they are in that person's life. And from there, you know, there may be a lot more evidence that comes through, memories, things that I'm able to share. And then there's typically a message, the most beautiful part, what the spirit wants to share. I will feel their emotion. It's not uncommon for me to start crying because when you connect in with spirit that way, their energetic love is something that we have a very hard time conceptualizing on Earth because it's pure and it's the most beautiful feeling I've ever felt. Which brings tears.
So, Courtney, how can listeners learn more or contact you?
You can contact me on Vagaro. That is my booking app. And again, the business is called The Divine Connection. You can also find me on Google, and there is a link on there.
And is there anything I didn't ask about that you'd like our listeners to know?
Well, I do have a really exciting trip coming up in just about 10 days now. I will be heading to Birmingham, England, and studying trance mediumship. So I'm incredibly excited for that, the growth and expansion. I look forward to so much. I have started doing some trance work, and I do believe I will receive a lot of clarity in working with people who also do that work, because again, it doesn't come with the best instructions. And transmediumship is a very different type of mediumship. So the best way that I could explain that is, have you ever seen the movie Ghosts?
Mm-hmm.
With Demi Moore and yeah. Patrick Swayze, Whoopi Goldberg?
Yeah.
That is transmediumship. So it is a form of spirit embodiment.
Okay.
To where the communication comes directly from spirit, and I basically step aside and allow them to communicate through me. And I've become a clear enough channel that I can allow that to happen, and it is energetically possible, which is beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And would you say it's kind of a graduation from what you're doing now, more advanced?
Yes, I would definitely say more advanced. A bridge into another form of mm-hmm. mediumship. And it takes a lot of faith, mm-hmm. but I just trust and believe in spirit so much. And I want to be able to help people connect.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most beautiful gift that I could give.
That is beautiful. I'm very interested in wilderness or wild things, things untamed.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any experience out in a wild place or even with plants that you'd like to talk about? Anything that was meaningful to you?
Oh, well, plants definitely talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so do animals. Yes, absolutely. One actually kind of humorous one is at the beginning of my awakening, I didn't understand why there were crows around me. And I'm not talking like one or two crows that we typically see. I'm talking 30 to 50. An obscene amount of crows. And I was finally able to come to the understanding that they are messengers, and they were coming to me at the beginning of my awakening to assist me.
Hmm.
Now, unfortunately, they also brought a lot of crow poop that they loved to leave on my car every single day whenever I would go outside. It was just covered.
Hmm.
And so through my understanding of animal communication, I was like, well, I'm going to give this the good old college try. So I sat down crisscross applesauce in my front yard, closed my eyes, sat there with the crows coming in, and just asked them, can you please, please not poop on my car anymore? Because it's really hard to clean off.
Mm.
And I love you being here. And I love communicating, and you're such a joy, and you're so beautiful. But if you could just do that one thing for me, I would greatly appreciate it. Well, about 3 weeks later, my other half, he came home, and I sort of giggled. And he says, what are you laughing about? I said, well, the crows haven't pooped on my car anymore. And he was like, no, they haven't. They're still out there. They're everywhere. How did you do that? I said, I simply asked.
Oh, sweet.
And they stopped. And then I understood a lot more about animal communication and how connected we actually are. Because we can speak to them. And they do listen. And whenever you come into that communication in a heartfelt, open way, it's pretty cool.
Mm.
And no more crow poop.
Oh, nice. Well, that might be a heads up to some of our listeners if they're having some issues with some animals.
Exactly.
You always try that quiet communication.
You can just talk to them.
Yeah.
Just be open.
All right, Courtney. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And good luck on your journey and your training coming up. And it'll be interesting if we can talk to you maybe after you get back and the continuing adventures of Courtney. I don't know. Anyway, thanks again so much.
Absolutely. It's a wild ride.
Oh, yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Keep doing every good thing you can. I'll see you next week.